This is Fenton Dunn, and you're very welcome. No corporate candy floss news, no political spin. Truth Radio by Internet. Here, the expression is still free. You're on the inside track from breakfornews.com. It's Tuesday, the 25th of January at 9 p.m. Eastern, and you're very welcome to the Inside Track on breakfornews.com, sponsored by neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. And this is Fintan Dunn with a special edition of the Inside Track tonight. We'll be charting the prospects for the year ahead, 2005, and it's looking good. Yes, I know a lot of people are downhearted because we didn't get rid of George W. Bush, but if you read the signs, it's clear that despite all the bluster from the Bush administration, the clock is running out on the great Bush adventure. And the signs of that are everywhere. What signs are they, you say? Oh dear, maybe you've been listening to the mainstream media too much. Later, we'll take a look at how the unstoppable momentum of the internet is about to change politics as we know it. But let's begin with the military and economic options for the Bush administration, and they're narrowing by the day. A lot of people were thrown by George Bush's inaugural speech, a sort of military version of Martin Luther King's Let Freedom Ring. And then when news came out from Seymour Hersh that the United States was conducting secret reconnaissance missions in Iran to help identify potential targets, well, a lot of people figured that the crazy Bush guy was on the warpath yet again, determined to take advantage of his renewed mandate. Now, let's just get a grip. When that Seymour Hersh story broke, I recall subtitling it with something along the lines of, "This is pure propaganda BS," and so it is. I've raised questions about Seymour Hersh before as to whether he could possibly be as dumb as he's coming across, but he was clearly used in this case as a way of getting out information which the Bush administration wants to get out anyhow. The first suspicious aspect of the story was that it was a reconnaissance mission for potential nuclear, chemical or missile targets, as if the United States didn't have the most sophisticated satellite spy system in the skies. Believe me, the US is in no need of ground troops to confirm the locations of potential Iranian targets. So, using Seymour Hersh as a convenient channel, the information is leaked, tending to give the impression of secret plans within the Bush administration to move on Iran, against the backdrop of that infamous inauguration speech. How about the reality community's reaction to this? Well, the Iranian foreign minister completely dismissed the report as psychological warfare. "We think the chance of a US military attack is very low, unless someone wants to make a major strategic mistake." The Iranian intelligence minister was thinking along the same lines. What did he think of Seymour Hersh? Quote, "This person is crazy." Okay, so by now you're getting the idea that report was entirely spurious. So what's going on? Well, the great big bluff is going on. The United States is on the verge of defeat in Iraq, and attempting to cover its current problems, it's hyping up. If you want to imagine what this is all like, it's like a really tough guy talking really tough while they're sinking in quicksand. Here's the reality, as explained by Joseph Galloway in an article you can find on Break for News today. It's part two of his article. He wrote one about a year ago called How to Destroy a Great Army. And this time he's talking about how it's going to take 10 years to rebuild the US Army. As an indication of just how bad things are, around about half of the troops going into Iraq in the current rotation will be Army Reserve and National Guard soldiers. That's right, part-time soldiers confronting the most challenging guerrilla warfare landscape in the world, and attempting to do a job where they have lost control of the situation on the ground. Do you know that right now the US military is transporting vast amounts of its supplies by air because it's so open to attack when transferring supplies by ground? So much damage has been caused to the army, writes Galloway in that report, that it's going to take 10 years to fix it, much as it did, he says, when we pulled out of Vietnam. So, does all that sound like an army which is in any condition to launch an assault on a new front in Iran, especially when you consider that they're only fighting, really, in the north of Iraq. The south of Iraq is relatively quiet. That's the part where the British troops are mainly located. And the south of Iraq is very much under the influence of the Iranian government. So if an attack was launched on Iran, there would be an explosion in the south comparable to that in the north. Just imagine the combined effect of all of Iraq and all of Iran on rebellion. It's unsustainable. It couldn't be done. It's pure bluff. So, that's the military aspect. What about the economic side? Well, the military and the economic tie together around that request by Bush for another $80 billion for the war in Iraq. Time was when that would just be loose change, but that was when the Bush team had the initiative and were promising to let freedom ring all over the world. Now we see the results of that. Now there's no validity to those claims, and now $80 billion is suddenly a lot of money. And it's especially a lot of money when you need a lot of money. As another report on Break for News Today shows, the central banks of the world have been moving away from the dollar. Over the last 2 years, 70% of central bank fund managers say they've moved into the euro. And with good reason. In some cases, the return on their investments in the United States have been offset by the currency losses, which means they actually lost money on investing in the US. Now, the gap right now between what the United States sells abroad and has to import is negative, not in its favor. Around about $55 billion a month needs to be found in terms of new investment in the United States in order to ensure the dollar doesn't drop further. Just to flesh that figure out for you, it's not exactly small change. It works out around $1,800 million a day. And people don't put that kind of money up unless they think they're going to get a good return on it. The reason they like the euro is that the European Union sets budgetary targets for itself and for the constituent nations and requires everybody to stick to those good financial management targets for their economies. And if you think the flight out of the dollar is bad, well, you see what happens if George Bush doesn't cut back on the deficit. All that means that the squeeze is on. The budget deficit and the current account deficit mean there's no more money for foreign war adventures. And what about options like a draft, for example, to solve the problems of the lack of manpower? It's not really the manpower that's the problem. The problem is allocating any more scarce resources to something that doesn't bring a return. It's economic suicide. The Bush administration know it. Even better, the market know it, and they will drop them like a hot potato the moment they see any sign that the United States is not prepared to face up to the reality of a lame duck presidency. I think at the end of 2005, people will look back and wonder how it was that George Bush ever got re-elected, considering how badly his administration came apart at the seams during 2005. Which brings us to another interesting angle on all this. They lost the election. I know that. You know they lost the election. But even more importantly, they know they lost the election. They know that in practice they failed to mobilize the necessary support in the American people. Despite all the hype, despite all the fear tactics, etc., there is a solid and clear majority of Americans firmly opposed to the direction they attempted to head in the last few years. And that's a political reality that impinges on them regardless of whether they've secured the presidency or not. So, the lame duck hops around on one leg. But they're not making like that. They're still making eagle noises. But don't buy it. It's not happening. Okay, that's how it's shaping up for them. What about for us? Coming up, the social and political changes which are about to flow from an internet revolution that's really only just getting going. You're on the Inside Track on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
Life just calling, living in that age. Living in this time. Try to call my way a crime. Trying to say I'm shady. Life just calling, living in that time. Just the same. Some just play a different game. Call it living in the town.
And you're very welcome back to the Inside Track on breakfornews.com. Now, the rise and rise of the internet continues, and maybe you think you've seen it all. No, you ain't seen nothing yet. And the internet is a rather troublesome thing from a political point of view. You saw key role the internet, blogs, alternative media played in the recent election fraud controversy, pushing that issue all the way until it eventually ended up in the Senate and House of Representatives, where leading Republicans ended up using scathing language against who? The Iranians? The evil empire of the Soviet Union? The Syrians? No. This time, the bloggers. My, what have bloggers ever done to deserve such high-profile mention as an enemy of the state? Certainly an enemy of the Republican state. Well, that shows you the power of the internet, doesn't it? Indeed, the US is, of course, well aware of the power of the internet, and that's one of the reasons why they've just ordered an American internet service provider to stop hosting the website of an official Iranian news agency. ISNA, the name of the agency, is widely read in Iran, and it's moved to another server, no big deal. But governments everywhere are aware of the power of the internet, the power of bloggers, and Iran itself is no exception. You'll find an article on Break for News about Iranian attempts to pull the plug on their own web dissidents. Now, fortunately, things haven't got to the point where they're arresting bloggers in the United States yet, and they're unlikely to either, in all realism. But over in Iran, that's exactly what they've been doing. Since 2001, about 3,000 bloggers have been blogging away in Iran. And because of the clampdown on media, printed media, in Iran, many Iranians felt that was a ray of light. And the Iranian equivalent of Break for News and bloggers who bring the truth on matters to the... And the Iranian equivalent of breakfornews.com and the bloggers was generating the kind of political momentum you saw in the election fraud movement in the United States. Late last autumn, Iranian authorities began the crackdown, but it has come to light. And testimony has already been heard before an Iranian presidential commission from journalists and bloggers who had been beaten, left in solitary confinement and forced to denounce what they'd written online. Which is deeply ironic for a lot of reasons, not least of which is that the Iranian equivalent of, I suppose, Keith Olbermann is Iranian former Vice President Mohammad Ali Abtahi. He has a blog. In fact, he's a pop culture icon in Iran because of his very accessible, intimate and streetwise manner in his weblog. All that's just to demonstrate to you the political power of the internet, especially when it's connected from ordinary people posting, blogging, discussing. That's the future. There is no clearer sign that the internet is the future than a recent poll. And that poll shows that you should take heart. Mainstream media is indeed the servant of some of the most repressive forces in society, especially in United States society. The problem is this, that nightly network news shows are viewed regularly by around about 65% of people 65 or older, compared to only about 22% of those in their 30s and younger. And the hard reality is this, 75% of young people go to the internet for their news. Only about 15% of them go to television. Meanwhile, the internet is still accelerating in terms of development and is likely to impact television itself. A German company called CyberSky has just come up with a new way of distributing television content real-time on the internet without those server busy messages. It uses BitTorrent-type technology to distribute television shows across the internet at real-time speeds. The secret is that as well as receiving the television signal, you also participate in rebroadcasting it. And that means that people around the world will be able to produce and distribute television shows without high-end server capability. And as if all that wasn't bad enough, what about the startup in South Korea, Oh My News? Oh My News is an internet newspaper produced in South Korea by the people themselves, only a very small editorial team. Most of the reporting is done by ordinary individuals who get a small fee for the articles that are published. All of these developments are putting the ability to disseminate information into the hands of ordinary people and undercutting the monopoly of the mainstream media and the media giants. Once the advertising money starts to follow the people onto the internet, that pulls the funding rug from underneath the mainstream media. Already they're under pressure. For example, expensive websites like Fox or CBS take an awful lot of money to keep running the way they run them right now. Whereas the future is like this, Joshua Micah Marshall's Talking Points memo, it's a blog, gets around about 500,000 visitors a month, as many as the entire website of the American Prospect, the magazine where Marshall used to work, and at a fraction of the cost. Could it get worse? An aging viewer profile, stiff competition from independent websites, independent broadcasters on the internet, and a cost base that's way out of comparison with its competitors on the internet. All it needs is for the internet to continue to develop at the rate it's going. So how's the internet itself doing? Has it slackened off or is it still growing apace? Is it ever? In a moment, back with the surprising details. You're very welcome back to the Inside Track on BreakForNews.com and this special show. Now, there was a time when I'm sure governments wished they could uninvent the internet, and perhaps at one point they could, but not any longer. The internet is too essential for economic development. That's why, for example, in South Korea, the vast majority of people who have the internet have DSL, and you're struggling, some of you I know, on a 56k connection. That's because these growing economies know the internet lowers costs, improves communications, cuts down on transportation oil use because of travel, and enables more flexible working. And it's those kinds of advantages which are behind the commitment of Guangdong Province in China to the internet, and the commitment to the internet in China, in Guangdong province, gives you an indication of just how vital the Chinese Communist Party, of all people, sees the internet in its future economic development. By the end of this year, and this may surprise you, by the end of this year, in Shenzhen, in Guangdong province, for every 100 people, there will be 85 mobile phones. For every 100 people, 95 of them will have cable TV. Half of those, it will be digital cable TV. For every 100 households, there will be 80 computers. That's a computer in 4 out of 5 homes. And half of all people are expected to be subscribed to the internet, with half of the enterprises having homepages and half of the government services delivered by internet. So the internet is here to stay. The genie is out of the bottle and can't be put back in. About half of people in the United States have access to DSL, and 53 million have contributed something online, with about 15 million or so people having their own website. And blogs are growing at an incredible rate. 6 months ago, there were just about 3 million blogs. But coming up to the end of last year, that had grown to 4.3 million blogs, with around about 400,000 fresh postings every day. And it's having an impact which sheer marketing muscle can't overcome. Both of the presidential websites were very well promoted, very well funded, and both presidential campaign websites had a lot of visitors, but nothing like the number of visitors to JibJab back in July at the height of the campaign. JibJab had 10 million viewings in the month of July, 3 times the number of hits on both presidential campaign websites combined. And that's one of the problems for the establishment groups attempting to use the internet. Really good internet is hip, it's streetwise, it's low cost, and it's here to stay. Joe Ito is a Japanese venture capitalist. He's well aware of that. He predicts the web will become self-organizing and that a new form of emergent democracy is coming, one that will be more flexible and more transparent than traditional representative democracy. I posted in the last few days some photos taken at those gala balls attended by George Bush and Laura, and really they looked like such an anachronism, an aged ideology supported mainly by those who are older, and it's on the way out. At the other end of the scale, more than 2 million children between the ages of 6 and 17 have their own website. And that's the future. Out with the old, in with the new. Unstoppable momentum. I spoke today on Maria Heller's show about an old illustration I've used before, I know, of what happened with calculators. And I really enjoyed doing the show. By the way, I'm on another show next week. I won't announce that until it's just coming up. But back when calculators were beginning to be widely used, educators, teachers were opposed to it, many of them, and teaching organisations and educational groups were getting together to make some policy decisions about calculators and whether they would allow them to be used. It would, they said, destroy children's ability to do ordinary math. Well, what happened to the great plans of the educators? In that time frame, in the about 9 months period between when they first began speaking about it and when they sat down to try and make some policy decisions about it, already the calculator revolution had exploded in the schools. Every second kid had one. The price had come crashing down. And before you knew it, it was too late. It was too late. The calculators were in. The system simply couldn't respond quickly enough to repress them. That's what's happening with this generation now. That's what's happening with the internet. That's what's happening through the internet with political expression. And I think it's deeply ironic. There is a website I'd like to draw your attention to. It's called ratemyteachers.com. And more than 6 million ratings have been posted by students on about 1 million teachers at more than 40,000 American and Canadian middle and high schools. That's triple the number of ratings from a year ago. And it covers now about 85% of all the schools in both the USA and Canada. ratemyteachers.com. So how long do you think it's going to be before those who hire teachers begin to go to ratemyteachers.com and consult it just to see how the ratings are? Hey, I like your prospectus, but you don't score too well on ratemyteachers.com. Now, what do you call that? That's democracy in action. Who'd have thunk it? But there you go. There it is. People power in the hands of kids already using the internet. And so what you see there in microcosm, you're about to see in macrocosm. This is the future, this is the internet, we are the media, and this is the inside track on breakfornews.com. And I'll be back again with another edition soon. I hope you can take the time to join me then. In the meantime, for breakfornews.com, have a happy 2005. See you soon.